This is Amateur Logic, episode 220, for August 14th, 2026. Amateur Logic is brought to you by ICOM. Fun, Sun, and QSO. From base stations to portable models, ICOM has the best radios for working your favorite bands this summer. Greetings and welcome to another episode of Amateur Logic. I'm George.
I'm Emil.
And I'm Mike.
And Tommy is not with us tonight. Huntsville next weekend. I'll be there. Emil?
I'm going to be there, man. You ready to go? I already got my people hitting me up saying when we leaving and all the planning fun. So, yeah, let's go.
You leased out all the seats?
We got all the seats.
Oh, man.
The cheapo mobile is full.
Looking forward to it. I've started my shopping list. I don't have much on it yet, but a few small items on there that I need.
I'm hitting that flea market, man. And plus, I need another pin for right here on this hat.
You do? Yeah, I can see that. It's you're kind of leaning to one side. Mike, what's been going on up there?
Well, I've been vacationing. So, you know what? I don't know why they call it a vacation or a holiday, because you find out all this stuff that needs to be done around the house. So it's really not a holiday per se.
Well, the same thing could be said about retirement too. That's a similar vein. Email, what's going on down there tonight?
Let's see. Besides it being stupid hot and humid all at the same time, and we get alerts from Glenn every day, and it's definitely cooking down here. But you know what? I must say that it sure is the sun and all the heat. It sure is keeping my mesh core repeater and nodes charged up. So you're gonna hear about that tonight.
Yeah, I think it's going to get pretty meshy in here tonight.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a good bit going on with that this episode. It's been probably, you know, within a degree or so of your temperature down there, up here a few hours to the north.
Not good.
No, not good at all. What? Heat index is 105 to 110.
I just heard on the... the pre-recorded episode you were playing, us talking about 105 heat indexes for field day.
Yes. And now, that's pretty bad for that early in the year. That was a hot year, man. So, Mike, what are we looking at?
Well, I guess you could call it nuclear-powered CubeSat. This was kind of hush-hush. It was launched on July 7th. It was rocketed into space aboard a SpaceX Transporter 17 mission. The satellite's called BOHR, B-O-H-R, for Beta Voltaic Orbital High Reliability. Of course, I'd never name anything like that because sure enough, it'd come back to bite me. it uses 48 tritium batteries, which is really interesting. So I guess... tritium has two neutrons instead of one, which hydrogen has, and it has one proton. So I guess that's a good thing. You can read all about it. It's way over my pay grade, but I thought that was pretty interesting to have a battery that's basically nuclear that was launched into orbit back in July.
So I'm just assuming this is probably not an amateur radio CubeSat.
No, I don't believe so. I think all it has on it is sensors, and they didn't get into any detail or any specifics as to what the sensors are going to be measuring, but probably radiation.
I was reading it, Mike, and it says it's something to do with in support of lunar bases or something like that.
Oh. Huh.
Does it involve aliens?
I'm not saying it was alien, but it was alien.
Yeah. Email, you alluded to something earlier that we're going to talk about tonight that you've got a little experience in. I have zero, but that's probably going to change. I think Mike's got some. Oh, yeah. There you go. So that's the latest Baofeng?
This is not a Baofeng, no. This is a Seed Studio WIO Tracker L1 Pro companion that's on my mesh core. This is what hooks to my phone and then goes to a repeater that's sitting out back so that I could be on the Gulf Coast mesh network that's down here from Florida to Texas. I found it amazing. And as usual, it's all Glenn's fault. So check it out.
Hello, George, Tommy, Mike, Amateur Logic TV viewers. Let's take a walk to the shop. See what I've been working on for about a month now. Trying to learn what it's all about and what it's doing. And what I figured out about some propagation, as well as the use case. And as with all networks, there's always some issues, whether it's compatibility or other. But let's take a quick look at the mesh core network that's set up here on the Gulf Coast. In fact, it's the Gulf Coast mesh network. So there's my temporary setup, which just seems to be working. Cool thing is no battery. No power to it, and the thing's been running for a month straight, and it stays about 90% charged and repeats what I do from my companion. So we'll take a look. So on the house end, I have a little Seed Studio WIO Tracker L1 Pro that is acting as the companion, as they call them. And whenever you're not connected to it, the messages come across the display in there in the companion. And this basically connects up to my phone via Bluetooth. And then it'll in turn talk to the repeater that you saw in the field, the temporary repeater that I put up there. So that's the basics of how they talk to each other. I'm connected to this one all the time, which is getting contacts and messages through the repeater out in my behind the shop in the field. And then that in turn talks to another repeater that's at Stennis Space Center up on their test stand. So need infrastructure. And so far it just works. I want to see what that process looks like. This is me connecting up to the mesh core software. And right now you can see I'm disconnected from the actual device. So I'm going to connect to my device via Bluetooth. It's going to sync the contacts and the channels that I've subscribed to and then look for messages. Once it's finished all of that, then I'll go over to my channels that I've listened to. I'll let it go. There you go. There's 60 new messages since I've actually connected the last time. But these contacts, something to mention here, the contacts are all about the other devices, repeaters, and companions that it'll see. You can see I've already filled up 350 of the contact slots, which is the most it'll hold. But that's the way you can check and see. In my case, my repeater sitting out there is the cheap old repeater, as I called it, for which we can basically run a ping test from the companion over in the closet here in the house over to the repeater. You can see there the information you get back from there. So that is my next hop, so to speak, to the mesh network. So Bluetooth from the Android, and from there it's all LoRa network on the 900 megahertz ISM band between the companion and the repeater, and then the repeater in my next hop. So let's go take a look at some of those channels out there where the chats exist. All right, you have some public
there's a public channel in which lots of people are always talking in because it's what they call unprotocoled or uncoded. Kind of similar to packet radio, where they have the protocoled versus unprotocoled traffics. A little different, though. It's more for routing than anything. The fun, which is my favorite, good dad jokes in here. And good fun, I guess you could say. It's lighthearted people out there, which is awesome. A lot of people testing their repeaters constantly. So if you, as you can see, it's just like SMS, right, on your phone, except there is no internet involved here. This is a completely mesh network-wise. So there are ways to view that on the maps, as well as in that they have an app specifically for that, in fact. But there are quite a few items down here. Zooming all the way into me, you'll see there's my repeater in the yard there. So the cheap old repeater. But there's plenty of ways for me to get to all the way around the lake and west of that. And when you look at it, it's a big Gulf Coast network. So test channels, like I said, people are always testing their connections to see where they're making it with their repeater and or a companion, how many hops it takes to get places. And of course, we have Glenn, KG5CEN, in total control of the weather channel here within the mesh. So it's always good to get information, and he's pretty vigilant about putting it there. So thank you, Glenn. And that's the app. That's a little bit about the app.
The type of device I got for the repeater was this Keepteen solar powered, what do they call it? D5L. Technically, it's got the two antennas there for the 900 meg ISM band in the US, and its GPS antenna along with that solar panel. Inside of it is the Helltech V4 board that you can see here. And it was very easy to set up. You could literally flash it straight from the web with a serial connection from a laptop. So browser straight to the firmware with a USB port inside of the device. So the setup of that firmware for mesh core was not hard. It was more of setting up the node for the specific network that I was joining in all of its nuances. But very, very good hardware so far. It's been sitting out in that field for almost a month, and never has it died in the heat, in the wet rain. And, you know, it's very well put together. And the software seems to just work. So I'm sure there'll be updates, but so far, so good.
So let's talk a little bit about that network. It's the Gulf Coast Mesh Network that I'm on, which is started primarily in Louisiana area. However, I'm just across the border over Mississippi, and you can see from Texas along to Florida in the Gulf Coast, really for hurricane-type scenarios, is what I think they were going for here. You can see my repeater up there, the cheap old repeater, and the one I usually hit here down in Stennis to get out to that network, my next hop, if you will, to get to the bigger part. One of the things I liked about it was we always had fun with New Orleans when I lived in Slidell, of communicating around the lake Pontchartrain, and they've got that well covered here. So just imagine being able to send those messages, and all these repeaters are solar repeaters based on, you know, the sun, and, you know, this has the potential to definitely survive other forms of communications dropping out. So I'm sure with everything, though, there's traffic woes and issues. And in fact, a lot of the meetings I attend that they go to, they're talking about routing codes and filters and other things for traffic items. But I'm sure the communications part of this system is just, it just works from my perspective, which is why I was interested in it and wanted to see what the 900 meg band was all about. But they do have a good interactive traffic map here, which is showing devices when they're actually talking, etc. So you can ping your next hops, ping what they call flood ping, to see how you're doing throughout the network. Of course, you can also send messages and test things as well. So pretty neat setup, and neat apps that they have out there, so you can get involved and see what's happening. So one of my fascinations with the mesh networking was, of course, the details behind the radio and physical protocols and layers and modulations, you know, all those things hams love to look at. And I was surprised at what I found. There's a protocol, or the actual LoRa system, which stands for long range, uses what's called CSS modulation, or chirp spread spectrum. There are settings in the devices when you get them that have to do with how this works and you know, set up items, and most of the networks published how their networks are set up or should be for you to join in on the network in the mesh. But the actual protocol is pretty fascinating to me. I always like the visuals behind what the what it actually looks like over the air. And one of the other things I learned about as well is that it's using the 900 megahertz ISM band. So it's a very interesting band that I don't really know much about. So I figured learning a little bit about the propagation would be good as a ham. So I did notice that there are openings, tropospheric ducting type openings, where you can see messages from all over the place, depending on what that opening is affecting in the atmosphere. So pretty neat stuff, visually what's happening on the waterfall and in you know, the radio part of it. So still learning, still trying to figure out exactly what they're doing, but the signal characteristics are very similar to some of the below the noise floor type signaling and robustness of decoding that can happen with this protocol. So it's obvious why they picked it. So it, you know, survives noise as well as try to go long distances with that line of sight band, 900 megahertz. Even though I'm sure that band is better than, let's say, 2.4 gigs or above at getting through things, around things, etc., it's still up there in a small wavelength. So, learning all about it. There's lots to learn. Heading over to their website, gulfcoastmesh.org, you can see right off the bat the purpose in the creators or organizers' minds here, you know, when comms that hold, when the coast doesn't. So very similar to a lot of volunteer ham personnel trying to do emergency communications here. It's just another tool in the toolbox for that matter that's using radio. I must admit, the appeal for the solar power control and of the device, the repeater side, and this little companion that I have that I use to communicate with that network, that's a great idea, because it's gonna survive. Like I said, it's been out in that field for a month, and I don't think the battery level has gotten below 80% ever. So I gotta hand it to it. As long as the sun's burning, it's gonna be up and doing something. So anyway, their website is pretty well organized to get people started. The map there is there. There's a web version of that
map sitting there and statistics showing you how much they're growing, what's where, and even a lot about how to get started and setting it up, built for hurricane season. There you go. We're right in the middle of it. So, but actually standing up a repeater instructions here, documentation on what the settings are, and actually how to set up the repeater. You can actually do it from here. Like I said, the web, pretty neat stuff. And there's lots of information about the settings and what they mean. And, you know, as people technically figure it out, jump on this network. So again, I think it's a pretty organized group. They meet every Monday on a Discord server and talk about all sorts of topics, including the challenges, because there are challenges just like anything with hams organizing people or herding the cats is a fun task that, you know, we all deal with as well in emergency communication services and networking in general. So no exception, but another tool in the box.
You always need more tools in the box, huh?
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Especially right in the middle of it. We're right in the middle of it right now. So thanks to Glenn, I'm definitely hooked. I'm seeing messages right now. When you're not hooked to the phone, by the way, you get the messages right on the device.
I was wondering about that.
And when you hook, it syncs everything that this thing has heard in between to the phone. So it's pretty cool. I'm not going to lie. I'm impressed with the way it works so far.
That is pretty cool. Well, I got a question now, and I think the map you showed is probably changing every day as far as, you know, where there are repeaters and such.
It does. But, it does. This. Go ahead.
Okay. So anyway, looks like y'all are pretty well populated down there along the coast. And then there's a big jump, and then there was like five in Jackson. I think there's more than that now. I don't know, because I'm not on there at this point. But there's nothing between us connecting them.
That's right.
Is there internet gateways along, or is it strictly RF?
So I have seen the what is the name of that tool? I'll think of it. It's MQTT, I think it is.
Yeah.
You're probably familiar with that as a developer, you are, right? There's a chat protocol that it lets applications talk to each other.
I've heard the letters.
Yeah, but I don't think those devices that you were seeing are that. I think they are tropospheric ducting that's happening. Because there is ducting on the 900 megahertz ISM band. I noticed that right off the bat. I've seen connections that have like maybe 10 to 15 hops it's taken me to get to the west. But then all of a sudden there's ducting happens and you're hitting that same thing in two hops. So I'm like, okay, there's obviously something happening. Sure enough, you start seeing that map grow and then shrink. And I'm like, okay. So it's just like 2 meters, George. It reminds me of that in that sense. So I do think there are gateway type things with the MQTT, and I see some of them listed as that, but I want to say the majority of this network is definitely RF at the 900 meg band.
Okay. So apparently there is no direct connection. I mean, as far as the number of hops between up here in Jackson and down on the coast yet, one day there will be. So are you direct messaging people on here, or are you just messaging a group whenever you send a message?
Okay, so you can send, what I'm using is the channels they have set up. There's hashtag channels. I don't know if you've ever used Slack or Discord. It's very similar. There's public channels. There's private channels. There's all these channels that can be set up. And there's ways to filter and route tag using taggings or what they call regions. You can group things by region, but you're sending people, you're tagging people like at George or at, you know, my name is the cheap old companion. It's what it's called. So the cheap old companion is what somebody would at if they want me to hit me on a message, but it's going to be in a channel that's usually public. I kind of hang around the public ones and the test channels and the other things like that.
So if someone was up here in Jackson and they tagged you in a message or whatever the terminology is, tried to send a message to you, and since there are not enough hops to complete that, except in the case of a band opening, would the message make it to you?
No.
Never make it?
No, because there has to be a path, obviously. Mm-hmm. There has to be that hops path between us. And I know I heard at the last Discord meeting that they told us they're very happy about what's happening in Mississippi right now, because they found somebody who was going to literally set up. And there's a pretty good community that likes to volunteer services and equipment, as long as they have somebody to put it up there or stick them some places that can make a difference. Because let's face it, my Bluetooth is local to me, right? And it's hitting a repeater that's 20 feet up. The reason I'm able to get on this network is because of that 300-foot antenna at Stennis.
Yeah.
And that device. And that's connecting and bridging the gap between, let's say, Gulfport and New Orleans. Does that make sense?
Yeah. But now, back in the packet days, and they're still packet, but, yeah. You know, I could send a message, and it may not make it through today. You know, it might not make it all the way to where I intended it to go, but eventually it would make it there. Is this like real time? It doesn't.
I don't think so.
It's not buffered.
No, I don't think it's going to keep that message. It's not a path, and it's just not going to make it. You'd have to send it again when there is a path.
All right. So will you get confirmation that if you sent a message that it was received?
Yeah. In fact, not only that, but if you're at the way it works now, if my phone app is connected to the companion, it'll actually show you the path that made it.
Okay.
And this is not like amateur radio. This is encrypted. This is actual encrypted messages. And you know, that protocol, like I said, is pretty darn robust from what I see. So, but I'm sure there could be in the future storage. I know Glenn has a room. They call them room servers, which is like a BBS, George.
Okay.
So I think if you post messages there, everybody else can go get it and it'll sync to you.
Okay. Okay.
So there are services out there, but I'm still learning. I'm brand new to this thing, trying to figure it out. And yes, I'm going to say it one more time. It's all Glenn's fault.
I you know, after the Glenn Tenna incident,
yeah,
you know, anything's possible. You just don't know. And I saw something about Secret Squirrel in the chat room a while ago. I don't know what that's about, but
Glenn's behind it. Squirrel.
Okay.
Yeah. He is the secret squirrel, no doubt.
Okay. All right. We're going to be right back. Don't go away.
Find Sun and QSO. From base stations to portable models, ICOM has the best radios for working your favorite bands this summer. Whether outside enjoying sunny skies or inside by the AC, stay cool with ICOM. Kick back, enjoy the breeze, and make those QSOs with ease. Remote ready, contest capable, and built for serious signal, step into the future of amateur radio with ICOM's powerhouse trio, the IC7760 HF 50 MHz digital transceiver, the ICPW2 1KW HF 50 MHz linear amplifier, and the all-new RC7760 remote controller. Designed to work in perfect harmony, this system offers full remote operation, high output performance, and seamless integration across the bands. The RC7760 remote control serves as an extra control head, and up to five can be registered to the RF deck, though only one can be active at a time. For wireless connectivity, simply connect a commercially available Wi-Fi access point via the LAN port. Whether you're working from the shack, the field, or a remote site, you'll experience crystal clear audio, digital precision, and amplifier-grade power, all from a single unified interface. It's the ideal setup for contesters, MCOM operators, and high-demand users who expect more from their gear. Together, they redefine what's possible in amateur radio, setting a new standard for global connectivity and reliability. The IC7300 combines intuitive touchscreen control, real-time spectrum display, and superior signal purity into one compact rig. Serious performance for serious operators with the IC9700 VHF, UHF, 1.2 GHz all-mode transceiver. Whether used as a club setup or a personal portable station, the IC705 delivers capable ICOM performance when every contact counts. For more information about all of ICOM's great amateur radios, visit icomamerica.com/amateur today. And thanks, ICOM, for sponsoring Amateur Logic.
Thank you.
There's two different networks out there, basically. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, there's Meshtastic, and then there's MeshCore. And the difference is, think of Meshtastic, George, you can relate. Ethernet, back in the day of hubs, everything went everywhere. Whereas MeshCore is more a little bit closer to switch networking. It takes the path of, you know, it's a different path. It's not everything that goes everywhere, if that makes sense. Switching versus hub. You know what I'm talking about?
Okay, yeah. So a little faster throughput on one than the other, maybe.
And from what I hear, there's more hops available in MeshCore. You can go further out without, you know, blasting the entire network because of that, or the routing protocol might be a little different. But again, I'm learning. I'm on it.
Okay.
I'll figure it out.
Well, Tommy's not with us tonight, but he is head over heels on this stuff right now. He's really getting into it, and apparently has really got on the MeshCore bandwagon and having a big time with it. We've got a video from him tonight on a project he just recently completed.
Well, this project's been a long time coming, long time in the making, rather. I've been testing around playing with these little Helltech V3 boards. You've probably seen some of the segments on that in the past. They're nice little boards. It's got a cool little display on it. And anyway, it's got a nice readout, but I don't like this one because I've got the pins on it. I should have ordered without the pins. I didn't realize at the time they even came like that. There were very few available on Amazon when I bought this one. But at any rate, it's been a good learning tool. I've since bought one without the pins and 3D printed a nice little case for it, put a better antenna on it. So I'm going to turn this one into a solar node. I realized the ESP32 board uses a good bit of power, so I made a custom battery for it. And I've got a charger on here for the solar. Anyway, I've got a little box. We're going to put it all together today and talk about what I've got here. So I 3D printed some of these little battery holders. They just basically snap together like so. You make whatever configuration you want. And they're real easy to put together. They're very nice. So I printed some of those. And you can see I've got them on the battery. So this battery, I borrowed George's spot welder, and I made four parallel. This would be a 1S board, one series with them all together, but four in parallel. So all the positives are together, all the negatives are together. And when I did that, I left the tab hanging out for the connection on the opposite end. So that basically, when you charge it, the current flows through every single battery. And so there, you can see the positive and the negatives are opposite. So that way, that even though they would balance themselves, this way it's more even when they charge and discharge because some of the current's going through all the batteries. I did check each one of these battery cells. These are recycled batteries. I did a long time ago in my segment about getting basically free batteries. But I checked the voltage on them. They're all pretty close. If you build something like this, make sure that your voltage are close and your capacity on each battery is close. So I would suggest capacity testing them. I used my Xstar VC4S, I think it is, battery charger to grade them. And they all came up to about 2,000 milliamps, so 2 amps each battery. So I've got an 8 amp battery or 8,000 milliamp battery. To charge it, I've got this little USB-C version of a TP4056 board. This is a nice board. It's, like I said, this one's got the USB-C on it. If you see this video here, the first one I put on had USB, micro USB. While it works the same, I didn't like having to deal with the micro USB. And plus, I've got a little solar panel here that we're going to use today that I've been testing with. This is a 5-volt, 5-watt solar panel that we've been using. It's got a USB-C connector already on it, so I didn't have to clip it to test this. And so this board basically charges the batteries at up to 1 amp. One 18650 at 1 amp. So I'm charging the 4 at 1 amp, and it's been fine. So to save power on the board, I turned off the Wi-Fi. I set the screen timeout to as low as possible, which I think is 1 second. I turned off everything that I didn't need because nobody's going to really be looking at it. There's a heartbeat LED on here that blinks about once every second. Just know that the thing's working. And I turned that off as well. Doesn't use much current, but it's no sense in it being on there. And I've been using this little antenna that came with it. It's not the greatest antenna. Now this little charging board, TP4056 board, gets really hot. So I 3D printed this little cover for it. And while the holes didn't quite fit for all the wires, I used some nippers, made it just a little bit bigger. This was something somebody else made. It was on printables. It keeps the board from being so hot, so it's not hot up against the battery. Now the solar panel, you can charge this thing by USB-C, or you can put the 5 volts to these two pads right here. And that's what we're going to do today. So I've got my soldering iron here. I'll go ahead and turn it on so it can be warming up. This is my little battery powered one since I'm working off my little table. To give that a second to warm up. Now I did run it off of this little 3000 milliamp hour battery, and it works great. It's actually in this little one that I made, but I only get about a day and a half out of it. And when I was running it on that, we had a rainy spell and it kept running out of battery, so I'd have to plug it up. So since that, I have not had any trouble with the battery that I made. And we're going to seal this up with some put some fish tape on it. No idea why they call this fish tape, because it doesn't smell like fish at all. And I got some heat shrink, and if it fits, I haven't even opened this up yet, but if it fits, we're going to heat shrink it too, shrink wrap it. So we'll give that a try. As far as using a box, I've got this little weatherproof project box that I ordered for something else. I actually ordered two of them. Used one of them for another project, and I had one spare one. Came with this little piece of gasket material, and it goes inside this little ridge, this little groove in the top. Let's get this out of the way, and let's go ahead and take care of our solar panel. So I'm going to clip this end off. Now this wire came with about 6 or 8 feet of wire. I'm going to leave most of it on here because I'm going to mount the solar panel. A lot of people mount the panels on the box, but my box is kind of small. So I'm going to go ahead and do that. These wire strippers are so old. Okay, so this only got two in here. It's got one red and one black. So that cuts the guesswork out. This marked as a positive there. So we'll put the red on the positive, the black on the negative. All right, that's probably good enough. That way I don't worry about touching the battery or any of that. And what we're going to need to do also is we need to put a hole in the box, though, and run it through before we solder it. It fits pretty good. And the negative over here. Let's see if the adapter will fit through the hole. Go like this. Well, I can't believe those O-rings fit perfectly. These are number 31 O-rings. Looks like probably a Home Depot thing. I've had them for years and years. I'm going to have to use my Tommy makeshift socket set here. Good enough for this. This is for you, Mike. I still got this shrink wrap over here. Mike Morno and me. VE3MIC. Look at that. I pulled it off, even though it's going to be in the box and you can never see it. So let's pop this off and put the new one on. And it should just snap on. You should be able to feel it. So now we've got to start putting our, let's heat shrink our battery. So we're going to use this fish tape. It's good enough. Let's trim the excess off the sides. Okay, I went and got my wife's pink hair dryer again to do the heat shrink. This thing gets hotter than any heat gun I've ever seen. And I managed to get everything crammed into this box. I had to remove my little case I made for the TP4056, but it doesn't touch the board anyway, so I think it's fine. So let's see if the top will fit back on. I did go ahead and put the gasket on again, but I put the seam at the bottom, so if any water gets in, it'll come out through there. Okay, I think it's going to work. It's pretty tight, but it's in there. Let's go outside and put it up. Well, this is going to be the temporary home for it. This was, as you can tell, or used to be my bird feeder, but the little demolition team decided they wanted it more, so they could eat the bird food. There were hardly ever any birds here. You can see what they've done to my bird houses. They've chewed the holes out on them. Every single one of them. I've got them all around the fence, which I need to replace soon. But I wonder what the blue thing is. This is a PLA test. I printed this little piece of PLA that I didn't use. I've had it laid out here in the sun for a long time just to see how it holds up in the weather. It's been out here for about a month and it still looks just fine. It's not warped or anything. So we'll see how it goes. So let's go ahead and start putting this together. I'm not going to glue this on. I'm going to just slip it on. If it ends up moving, I will come back and glue it, but I plan on reusing some of this stuff. Now, when I had it, the solar panel ran into my window. I had it at a little bit of an angle, about like that. So when the sun comes over the house, it will hit this at an angle, and then it goes all the way, it sets over there. But like I said, this is a temporary setup, so no hate mail, please. Brand new bag of Lowe's zip ties. No Harbor Freight ones this time. Got the good stuff for you guys. So. Okay, it's up there. There it is. It's not super high, but it's higher than it would have been if I would have just put it on that pole. I wanted to put it up on top of that little treehouse thing over there, but there's too much shade. It wouldn't get enough sun. So I'm going to leave it here for maybe about a month or so. Works out and the battery holds up after we've had a few days of rain. I will move it up to the roof up there somewhere. I'll keep you posted on how it works out. 73.
Well, this is a meshed up episode.
It's a real mesh in here.
But I like the demolition crew. Demolition crew.
I learned a little bit in that one. I'm going to have to go back and watch it again, though, because I didn't. He's going too fast for me on some of the parts of it here. But, you know, I haven't done anything with any of this yet. It's all new to me. I just had a company, Elecro, reach out to me recently by email, and they have a little repeater box. It's actually, let's see, I've got a picture of it here. It's the ThinkNode M6 Outdoor Solar Power for Meshtastic. Now, of course, I don't know if there's any Meshtastic activity here in our area now. I think most of it's MeshCore, but they said they would send one over and I could evaluate it, and I figured, well, yeah, it'd be a good learning step for me. I don't have to build the whole thing. Basically, you know, just hook the antennas to it and the mount,
And I'm planning on mounting it on the side of the tower and see if I can reach the repeater up by Tommy. However, that's a mesh core repeater that's up there now, so I don't know. We'll have to find something with mesh-tastic around here so I can test this thing out. And then I assume it can be reprogrammed to be mesh core afterwards. Don't know enough about it yet. Anyway, it arrived this morning. So
just to let you know, George, when I got that repeater, it had the mesh-tastic firmware on it. I had to put the mesh core firmware on it.
Okay.
To become a part of this network, because that's the protocol they're using. With settings, there's all kind of settings that you put in there too for the spread spectrum settings and the power levels and things. So this particular group down here made it very easy for me to do that. In fact, just like the video said, you literally hooked it up to a USB port on your laptop and did it from the web. Hooked it right through, upgraded it to the latest mesh core, done. So I bet you have the same potential. There are some support issues you got to learn, and I'm sure you'll learn that about your model.
Tonight, though, I'm just going to do an unboxing of it because it just came in and I haven't opened it yet. So we'll just see what's in the box. I'm not going to get into any real details because I don't know enough.
Yep. Go big.
Okay. Nice packaging, double boxed.
No, it didn't fit.
Lower wind device, outdoor solar power, ThinkNode M6. US 915.
There you go. On the right band.
Okay. Little quick start guide. That should be helpful for me. Let's see. Let's get it out. Get a better look. Okay. I assume this is the solar panel.
Different.
Yeah. I believe the batteries must be included. It's got a little weight to it.
Yeah.
All right. LoRa. So that's going to be one of these antennas. 915 megahertz, that would be LoRa, wouldn't it? So it screws on there. I'm not going to screw it on now. There's another antenna, GPS, so it's got a GPS unit in it too. And these, that's nice connectors there, or covers for the connectors. I can't read that. UART, and the other one. Not sure what that is. It looks like it says IC. What would IC be, or IIC? Not sure. Have to learn that. USB-C.
IC, like the sensors, like on a Pi, the IC2 interface?
Okay. Yeah, it could be. I squared C. So they just said IIC. Okay.
Maybe they have sensors that hook up to them, right?
Yeah. And then a couple of LEDs, power, and
buttons.
Data. I don't think they're buttons. No, they don't.
Okay.
They don't push in. Oh, there's buttons right there. I don't know what they do, but function and reset. Oh, it came on for a second.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's battery.
I should probably turn it off.
It's going to boot up. to whatever its firmware is.
Yeah. Anyhow.
That's one of the first things I had to figure out, to boot it and then put it in a flash mode so that I could actually flash it.
Yeah. Well,
you'll figure all of that out.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of information about that, but I'm sure the website's going to go into details. And there's the mount, little plastic mount. You can swivel the thing around, get it to where you want it to go, pointing at the sun. So my plan is to take this, put it up on the side of my tower where I got a little height. I should be able to get back in to the shack from there. I'm going to have to come up with a companion device. I think maybe Tommy's got something he's not using that I could use temporarily. And see how this works. It'll be brand new for me. So little learning to go on there, but I appreciate Elecro sending that. And we'll find out how it works. Well, just beside it right now, but I don't even know how to turn it off yet. So after the show, I'll figure that part out. But yeah, it looks like it would take the weather. So
everybody in the chat room saying, put the antennas on it if you turn it on.
Well,
I was wondering about that myself, whether or not you cause any damage to the transmitter.
Probably that low of power. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. GPS, of course, is only going to be receiving.
Yeah.
Yep. We got antennas.
Just quick guy. Do not hit the button.
Uh-oh. Someone in the chat room said they bricked Helltech T114 by leaving the antenna off.
Well, in the little sheet that came with it, I don't see the power specified on there as far as the transmit power. 7,000 milliampere hour battery.
Yeah, what was mine? Negative 22 dBm. It's low.
Yeah.
It's like, is that like a quarter of a watt, maybe? Yeah. Maybe? Eight?
Solar panel is rated at 6 watts.
Is that what it was, Glenn? I forget. I mean, that's the one of the settings.
A 150 to 960 megahertz.
Wow. I guess that's to cover the Europeans.
I guess so.
Well, you got the US version, right? Set it on now.
Yeah.
Yeah, on the box, yeah.
Yeah.
Not gonna spend a lot of time looking right now. Built in 64 megahertz ARM Cortex M4. Yeah, I don't know on the power output. That'll be for a future segment.
We'll I think it's milliwatt, man. Mine was negative 22 dBm.
Looks like you can recharge the sun if you go back to the previous slide there, George.
Oh, looks like you could, doesn't it?
Yeah, the arrows are pointing up.
What was that hot? What was that hat, Mike, you invented?
Yeah.
Oh, the cranium cooler cap.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay. So apparently this must be a companion compatible.
Yeah. I want to say it depends on what firmware you put on there. You can make it both, I think. And Meshtastic and Meshcore. I think they're all interchangeable.
Okay.
Is it negative 22 dBm, like 0.01 of a milliwatt? Like a.
That's pretty low. 0.01 of a milliwatt?
Yeah.
No, it's gotta be more than that. 0.01?
Yeah. 0.01. A negative 20. I know the setting on mine is negative 22 dBm.
Provides low power long distance transmission.
Mm.
Okay.
I still can't figure out why it doesn't store and forward packets.
That's the network, huh?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, there's got to be a service out there. There are room, like I said, room servers on the mesh core that will do that. And when you connect to that room and log in as a guest or with credentials, if you will, because there's public-private key infrastructure as a part of these systems in general. So,
right. As soon as you said encryption, I was wondering about, you know, whole amateur radio thing about not being encrypted communications unless you're providing the key.
But it's not amateur radio.
This is not amateur radio.
It's not. It's ISM, I guess.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Which, you know, that's the main thing that's got me kind of thinking about is control. I thought about LoRa WAN a long time ago before all of this to do control over it. And now that I know that that's encrypted, that might be something to research. You have to write a little software, but, you know, maybe send control commands out over it to another one.
It's funny you mention that, but I can actually control my repeater and get telemetry from it. The temperature, the charge, I can do that over the network.
Okay.
So, yeah, you set all those credentials and who can do what to your device when you join it.
Yeah.
But Tommy's sending us messages, by the way. He's saying it's 158
milliwatts. 158
milliwatts.
Okay. That don't seem like much.
No, I don't think it is.
Oh, at that frequency, it's
yeah,
it's pretty good. Especially if you put directional antennas on it.
Well, I'm going to put it up, and we're going to see how it works, and I'm going to enlist Tommy's support because otherwise it might take quite a while, but I just opened the box. So there were a couple other things in there. All right, a USB-C cable.
Yep.
And some mounting screws if you want to mount it to a wall. Okay. Nice. So I opened that box. Mike, we were talking about opening boxes earlier this week.
Yes, we were.
And you had a comment on that seemed important.
I'm standing here beside myself. I'm drawing a blank on that one, George.
What was the slogan that you gave me?
Oh, if you can't open it, you don't own it. If you can't open it, you don't own it. I borrowed that catchphrase from Make magazine. Several years ago, that became their mantra. If you can't open it, you don't own it. If you couldn't open up something that you purchased, you really didn't own it. We're fortunate to have consumer nonprofit organizations defending consumer rights, such as the Electronic Frontier Foundation. This ultimately led to legislation or laws granting consumers the right to gain access to tools, diagrams, and parts where they normally didn't have access. Since summer's here, I decided to take advantage of the good weather, but being outside with no music or anything to listen to seems to cut part of the fun out, so I decided I would look around for an inexpensive portable radio that I could use outdoors. My search took me to this company called Prunus, which manufactures a lot of inexpensive radios, a lot of retro-looking radios, but looking at the features, for the most part, they all had kind of the same features. Although some of them were portable, handheld, crank radios, emergency radios, they did have quite a variety, as we'll see in these next few slides. One thing before we move on, this line caught my eye. The chips in our radios are all sourced from the United States. I have no idea what that means. These next few slides will give you a sample of what Prunus has to offer in their lineup of radios. A lot of them are similar in terms of features. Other ones have slightly different features, whether they be crank-powered or solar-powered. Some include a shortwave band. Other ones just include AM/FM. And some include a flashlight as well. I settled on this model J750. It had all the features I was looking for and then some. And I was surprised that it had a shortwave band, although I wasn't expecting great performance with it. But nice surprise, it tends to work very well.
At the dome, 3 hours, 18 minutes, coordinated universal time.
Some of the other features I really like about this radio is it does act as a Bluetooth wireless speaker, so I can stream music from my phone. I can also play music from a removable micro USB trans flash card or a USB thumb drive. Of course, it's got AM and FM built in, as well as shortwave band. The one other feature that I really liked about this is it had two speakers. It has really surprising good audio quality for its size especially, and I really like the retro 80s boombox style. These next slides contain the pages from the user manual, which is really well written, easy to understand, so you shouldn't have any trouble trying to figure out any of the functions. I didn't have any issues whatsoever. Just a pretty good, decent manual, and I wasn't expecting that. Time to take a look under the hood and see what this thing is all about. You've probably noticed these warning labels on equipment before. I tend to ignore them. I have a natural curiosity. Some may call it a sickness, to have a look inside something that I have and see what's happening inside and what makes it tick. Looking at the rear of the J750, you'll notice a small battery cover or battery door. And in behind that door is a standard size 18650 lithium ion rechargeable battery. You charge the 18650 battery by one of two methods, the internal solar panel or by plugging in a USB Type-C cable. To gain access to the inside of the J750, you simply remove 8 Phillips head screws from the rear of the case. Wow, not much going on in there. Actually, I was surprised to see decent speakers with good weighty magnets on each of them. And you can see on that circuit board, there are no tuned circuits at all. So this is not your standard super heterodyne radio. We'll get into that a little more, hopefully. We'll have a close-up view and we'll have a look and see if we can figure out what's going on here. Having a close-up look at the board, we can see our Bluetooth antenna on the lower left, and we also have an AC6969D4 Bluetooth chip, which also has some DSP capabilities in it as well. So I'm not convinced that it's only doing Bluetooth, but it's primarily there for the Bluetooth. And also there are, to the right of that, there are two HAA 2018A 12-watt mono audio amps. Moving on towards the right-hand side of the PCB, we'll look at our unknown mystery receiver IC. It may be some kind of direct digital synthesis on a chip, as there are no tuned circuits, and the tuning is done by an optical encoder rather than a variable capacitor, which is used in almost all the super heterodyne receiver designs. Well, I was left with more questions than answers having looked under the hood of that J750. I'm going to have to do some more deep diving in order to figure out what the heck that receiver chip is. It's because of the few components on that board, it's got to be responsible for receiving AM and FM and the shortwave bands, but without having any clues whatsoever to go by, it's kind of impossible for now for me to determine exactly what it is. So Hopefully in the next little while, I'll be able to scour the internet and come up with some ideas as to how I can determine what it is. Anyway, that's all for now. 7-3 from VE3MIC. Thing that got me is if these integrated circuits are sourced from the USA.
Yeah.
Where in the USA are they being sourced from? Like, does that mean there's a guy sitting in a room with a computer that's ordering chips from Asia? And just because he's placing the order from the USA, that makes it sourced from the USA? I have no idea what that meant.
Good point. Yeah.
It's probably the DSP chips, I'm sure. Probably.
I forgot about this. It has.
Waiting for pairing.
It rocks pretty good for a little tiny radio.
Well, email, you got stuff to talk about?
Here we go. I do have stuff to talk about, Joyce. There's a couple of things happening, and I wouldn't call it in the news, but definitely something I'm paying attention to. First thing is our W5SLA Ozone Amateur Radio Club Hamfest is basically moving, or has we're in the process of finding another date at the current venue and also looking elsewhere as well, just to do some things. There were some scheduling issues, so the reason that matters for me is because I'm going to get a table for Amateur Logic TV at this particular Hamfest, which we've done in the past. And I'm also going to attend the forum there. I gave up my digital mode talks. We were going to talk about DMR and let the Gulf Coast Mesh Group come in and talk. So lots to talk about there. So I'm looking forward to actually seeing that forum. I'll bet you there's going to be some stuff happening over at Huntsville as well on the mesh network. So besides that, I discovered that there's, and it's going to be upcoming. I'll figure out what it is, what's going on, but there's a new HF digital mode out there. You know, I've been stuck on Vara HF and Vara FM and other variations of Vara, on the NCOM front, so the WinLink networks, but there's also one out there. I think it's called Mercury, which is a different version or a rewrite of the Hermes HF modem. Yeah, and that's the GitHub link you're showing right there. So I plan on looking into this, seeing what it's all about. I saw some videos already of some people replacing it in place, in kind, basically fooling the system to say, here's a Vara protocol, but it's actually this new protocol or Mercury. So interesting thoughts, and I'm all over the digital parts of things like that. I love testing them and seeing what's out there and how it works. If it's better, you know, I think they claim here the ARQ part and the auto negotiation of the rates is much improved, but we'll see. So look at that, a new digital mode in the HF front.
Who would have ever thought such a thing could happen? It just keeps getting better.
Who would have thunk it? We might learn some stuff.
I guess that's it. Before we get out of here, though, we probably ought to go around because there might be some late-breaking important information that one of y'all would like to share. I'm pretty much blank slate. I'm just planning on being at Huntsville next weekend. That's as far as I'll go right now, but looking forward to that and seeing a lot of friends. And it is going to be the ARRL convention site this year. So should be a big crowd of folks there.
I got to tell y'all, I'm looking forward to that flea market. They said they improved it. They made it bigger. So I can't wait to see what's there. I almost pulled the trigger on a whole bunch of things last time I went a couple of years ago. So I have a feeling it might get interesting this year. Yeah. But the other thing is we're staying out by Gigaparts. And last time I saw Tommy on that Gigaparts visit to the store, I've been itching to go, man. I got to get there.
I'm sure Wayne and I will make a trip by there. Thanks for being here, everyone.
Are you fixing to get some supper?
Actually, when we were connecting before we went live, I was sitting right here eating supper. Since Tommy wasn't in here, I didn't have to kind of like guard it. You know, I was able to eat freely. 7-3, everyone.
7-3. 7-3.